Can you hear me, Seth? Seth, I don't know if you're hearing me or seeing me, nor do I know if you have a way of letting me know whether you can. Oh, okay, perfectly. Just so you know, for timing, I have 557, 57, 58, 59, 8, 58. 1, 2, 3, 4. Hopefully we have similar clocks. If this was high school, you would just run out and get the kid from the AV squad who come and fix your mic, right? Unless I'll just assume, unless you communicate otherwise, that we start at 6 o'clock as normal. All right, I'm going to do a little quick share screen test here. Okay. All right. Oh, my back is aching me. Seconds to go. Ooh, looks like you're on mute, but you got a microphone working. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3. Well, hello there, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Cambridge Inside Out. Hopefully, all's well out there in the wide, wide world. I blew off the last regularly scheduled program because just too many things to do. Honestly, I still have too many things to do, but I was kind of thought I'd at least catch up on a few things here today. Firstly, just to start, I just want to thank Mayor Simmons, who put together an event which was delayed because of weather, but eventually was carried out. I guess it was on the 23rd, unless, yeah, it was February 23rd. So it was called Grace, the History of Black Churches in Cambridge. This was the brochure from it. And I have to say, not to sound patronizing or anything, but I've always felt probably more welcome in black churches in Cambridge and amongst church people from black churches in Cambridge than most any place else in this city, including being, down at St. Augustine's, receiving a full-blown blessing of the pastor down in the basement of the church one time. But anyway, it was at the Kendall Public Lobby, which is really kind of part of the whole Google complex down there. It's not the first time that the mayor's office and others have put together displays, celebrating various things, and timed for Black History Month. And this week it was quite good. One of those little facts about Cambridge that people maybe should be more aware of, but probably aren't, is just how many churches there are in Cambridge. Some of them have very, very small congregations now, but they've more hearkened to a different era, perhaps. But many of the Black churches are still very, very active, and they have incredibly interesting stories because some of them went through real hardship to sort of maintain things. So anyway, it was a wonderful thing. There was music involved and food. And I'm not sure, but I believe the display might still be there. If you get a chance, if you're on Kendall Square, to go check it out. It's really quite interesting. Hearing some of the story and how actually even how Cambridge fits into the whole national story of Black History Month. It's no small role. I mean, there was a lot of suffrage movement. That was centered in Cambridge. And anyway, it was a great time, good display, and I'm just want to express my thanks once again to Mayor Simmons. Mayor Simmons also always makes a pitch at these events for good reason, for the establishment of a you might think of as a Cambridge museum. Not, and I don't mean sort of some sort of kind of cold, boring kind of museum, but she's been trying to put together something called and really that was sort of the sponsoring organization for this, was the Cambridge Museum of History and Culture, which is really more like a museum more about the people, personas, and more local history, as opposed to, I mean, Cambridge has an incredible rich history. Let's not forget, the founding of the, we find, love this paradox, the George Washington taking the oath as the first commander of the American military, the American Army, in Cambridge, right? Which the exact same site is where was one of the sites of some of the greatest anti-war protests in the 1960s and around 1970. But so anyway, the Cambridge Museum for again, as it's called, for of history and culture, is not so much about the sort of Cambridge on the national stage as it is about the people, the places, the events that have taken place here. And every opportunity to let that wash over me is something I always enjoy doing. So again, much gratefulness expressed for that. There's a lot of other things to talk about here since we last met, which was, I think, in early February. Not the least of which was the final ordination of the multifamily housing, let me call it the so-called multifamily housing zoning amendment. And again, I always refer to it as so-called because it was sold as simply allowing multifamily housing in all zones, residential zones of the city, which is technically true, but that wasn't even controversial. The real import of this really had to do with the rather, in some respects, at least the initial proposal called for dramatic increases in heights and densities and obliteration, really, of some setbacks. Just essentially just try and pack the buildings in, piled higher and deeper, as they say, with those with us with a PhD, in all zones of the city. And what will actually come of this is really unknown. I mean, in my view, the estimates for amount of housing production, multifamily housing production that will come of this, that was pushed by some of the people from the Community Development Department, I don't think that's verifiable. I don't think it's even reasonable, but they were their predictions. And I think There's a lot of people have some concerns about some of the unintended consequences of this. In fact, even it didn't even take them more than a couple of weeks before already there was some, at least one city council order is going like, uh-oh, under what we passed, somebody could just start building gigantic, what they love to call McMansions here. So there's a proposal now, it was at yesterday's city council meeting to limit the amount of square feet per unit to it can't exceed 2,000 square feet. I mean, I'm living in my palatial 1,100 or whatever square feet, one floor of a triple decker here. Yeah, so I guess 2,000 is sort of large, but even one city councilor expressed some concerns. Actually, it wasn't a city councilor, it was a kind of a problematic person during public comment, but did make one good point, you know, even a broken clock is correct twice a day, right? That in fact, a family might want to grow into a place if you have a large enough family, and you know, 2,000 might actually not be enough, in which case they'd be forced to move out of Cambridge. And I don't think that's really what anybody wants to see happen. But anyway, we'll wait to see down the road what the unintended consequences of the multifamily housing or so-called multifamily housing, really the big upzoning legislation that the city council passed. I honestly, just to sound, maybe I'm being a little cynical here, but it really ought to be renamed something like, you know, enact to provide housing units for upwardly mobile young professionals, which is really, I think, what this is about. Anybody has some notion that this is going to create great affordability? I don't think so. It may increase supply, which will maybe make some reasonably high-priced condominiums available to people who work, you know, doing coding in Kendall Square and bicycle to and from work. You know, maybe that's really what this is ultimately going to be all about. But, you know, you could never tell that from the rhetoric, of course, but I think that's really what it'll come down to. Let me say just a couple of other things. You know, I mean, I could go on and on about that zoning petition, but I think I've done enough in the past. And oh yeah, I should say that there was today, I didn't attend or tune in via Zoom. There was a meeting of the a joint meeting of the Housing and Long-Term Neighborhood and Long-Term Planning Committee to look into what some might view as the sort of the next phase of the densification of Cambridge, which is to look at what might be done in terms of zoning changes in the major squares and along the corridors. I certainly feel that, you know, putting in some somewhat taller buildings and denser buildings in some of the major squares is actually makes total sense, and you'll probably produce more housing units that way than all this other fancy dancy stuff that they just passed on February 10th. But yeah, I do find the question of what constitutes a corridor to be very problematic, perhaps because selfishly I happen to live on a cor what some might list as a corridor, namely Broadway. You know, Broadway sometimes is, sometimes isn't. Even with the bicycle plan, by Broadway was not included on the, you know, the streets list of streets that were slated to get the separated bicycle facilities. And then, in 2020, when nobody was looking, they snuck it in there, which is really creating a bit of a problem for a lot of people right now, including many of my neighbors, some of whom are disabled, who are basically going to lose access to their homes and. Or at least convenient access to their homes, you know, for bringing in groceries or, you know, at least one neighbor of mine, dear friend, uses a walker to get around. And basically now it's going to be a lot harder as a result of this because somebody decided Broadway was supposed to be a corridor, right? So anyway, I don't know what's going to come. I didn't go to the meeting today about what they're planning, whether they're going to say, well, if they allowed four-story buildings into the multifamily housing, which was downscaled from 6 to 9 or whatever they started out as, they're going to probably try and jack that up dramatically on corridors and certainly in the square. So don't be too surprised if you start seeing numbers like 20, 25 stories in all the public squares, which is kind of reminding me, there's a little bit of an interesting controversy happening, not in Cambridge, but just across the border in Davis Square, Somerville, where even though the zoning allows, I think, more like 4 stories under their current plans, some developer has floated the notion about putting in a 25-story building. I think it's a 25-story building. And it's interesting because a lot of the local people, some of the artists, because you'll basically you'll take away what's currently a music venue. So people are saying, wait, wait, whoa, 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 what's going on here? But then the characters from Cambridge, the ABC characters from Cambridge, are going across the border preaching density, density, density. And certainly some density, because Davis Square is, after all, a stop on the Red Line, makes some sense. But you know, so it seems almost like the sky's the limit to some of these folks. They don't believe in increasing density. They believe in dramatically increasing heights and densities beyond anything reasonable people could consider, you know, a rational number. But you know, anyway, it's interesting to watch. I'm especially interested in watching some of the ABC characters react to a proposal to put in, I forget how many units of housing on a parking area behind the Margaret Fuller House, and I guess we call it the Port now, or Area 4. And you know, some of the people who live there, most of whom are pretty modest income people, have some real concerns. But you know, the gentry of ABC, they come in and they say, how dare you oppose building, you know, the maximum number of housing units here? What kind of people are you? And it's actually the people who are opposing it are the people of modest income, who the gentry supposedly think that they're, in their sense of noblesse oblige, are supposedly helping. So it's almost comical to kind of watch the back and forth there, where, you know, the elite are basically telling the poorer people what's best for them. You know, don't you know we know what's best for you, right? Because we're so privileged. So anyway, interesting social dynamics going on in there. A few other things that I think are pretty important to mention, not so much on the housing front, but just in terms of city government. First is that yesterday, it was sort of a big day. There were three meetings at City Hall of consequence. First one I did not go to, even though I usually do, was on the city manager contract. They've been batting back and forth, contract negotiations. But yesterday, more at a 10 o'clock meeting, they went into executive session and came out of executive session. And apparently, though I have not yet seen it, they apparently voted a 4-year contract extension for city manager Yan Huang, which is good because I think he's a good manager, a good man. And but I haven't seen the particulars, and I'm sort of trying to get a copy because I've made it a bit of a tradition now of getting a copy of the city manager's contract and making it easily publicly available so people can gripe if they don't like the fact that the manager makes a pretty hefty salary, or if like when Bob Healey was granted the hearing aids or things like that, they'll make an issue out of almost anything, really. But I figured, you know, public disclosure is a good thing. Transparency is supposed to be a good thing. So I've done my best to make these things available to people broadly. So I'll have that available soon enough. I had to officially file a public records request. Usually I just go up there and knock on a door and they go, sure, Robert, and they run it off on a Xerox machine for me. But anyway, such is life. So we'll have that soon. And by the way, there was a time city managers worked without a contract. And I believe, though I may have this wrong, that somewhere in the very late 80s is when there was the first time they actually were having real contracts. I mean, the city charter just says the city manager serves at the pleasure of the city council, and they could hire a manager or fire a manager without any notice at all. That's true. In fact, that's still true. It's just that if you really wanted to get a manager to work here seriously, that's just nobody is today, these days, especially with housing costs and getting uprooted and what have you, is going to agree to just work at the pleasure of the city council. So yeah, if the city council decided to fire the manager in a huff, they could do that, but they'd still have to pay him because there's a contract now. So the manager is given some guarantees, and that's as it should be in this day and age. Maybe it wasn't so necessary in 1940, But in this day and age, I dare say it is. And so that was carried out on yesterday. And I'll talk about it maybe in the future, or at least just post it, make it available in Civic Journal, like I do. Another meeting that happened in the mid-afternoon was one which had been punted a couple of times. So there was a maybe it was at the February 10th meeting, I'm not sure, but I think it was. There was three items from the Cambridge Police Department that were required to get City Council approval under our surveillance ordinance. So whenever they introduce some new technology or put it in new cro a request to use some technology, the surveillance ordinance, which was passed, I don't know, 2018 or thereabouts, requires the City Council to give the thumbs up. So one of the items that came before them was had to do with license plate recognition. There was some batting back and forth about it, but they said, sure, that's a good thing anyway. And then it was another way, I think, again, having never owned a cell phone, I don't understand any of how any of this stuff works, but for getting access with qu more quickly to a phone, I believe that's what it was. And they after a little discussion, they said okay to that. But with the matter of use of drones, turned all the DSA nutcases came out, and the people who had been arrested at MIT, they all came out, wondering whether drones are going to be a great infringement on their civil liberties. And so the council did not approve that in the February 10th meeting, if I have that date correct. So they referred it to the Public Safety Committee, which was supposed to have a meeting, and then it didn't happen, but it did finally happen yesterday, and I was there. I will tell you what I was going to say. I actually did go to the meeting, but I got there late and the public comment had ended. And normally I wouldn't stick my neck out to do public comment at anything involving the DSA crowd because they're a bunch of hostile, well, assholes. But I did go there, and what I'll tell you what I would have said is that drones would be a good investment for the police department to utilize because they're cheaper than helicopters and a lot more maneuverable than helicopters. And so if you want to basically track what's happening in like a big mass protest, or if you've got foreign dignitaries in town and you need to sort of monitor what's happening, you could just fly, expensive, I suppose. But you could just have helicopters hovering, with really good camera technology to see what happens. Because, I mean, that's kind of what happens with it. We have traffic helicopters and stuff now. Drones are just seem to me just to be a cheaper alternative and more maneuverable. They also pointed out at the meeting yesterday that they also have small drones that can be actually brought inside a building. In the case where they suspect some problematic person is in there with a weapon, and they don't want to necessarily have, the cops come just charging in and putting themselves in danger. So sometimes you can actually put a drone in there, and then see whether there's a victim, whether there's a perpetrator in there, and it just buys a lot more safety. Anyway, they didn't decide on that because, this woman who often speaks for the American Civil Liberties Union, who is, by the way, one of the more elitist, snotty people I've ever encountered in interactions with city government, basically lecturing all the city councilors and the mayor as to what is, and having spoken to nobody in, who's really affected by public safety matters in Cambridge. It's very nice to sort of come from the outside and, in wonderful elitist things, talk about civil liberties when people are actually concerned about safety in their neighborhood, around their building, when there have been actual events, thanks to Mayor Simmons for mentioning some of the unsolved murders in this city, where it is at least somewhat a reasonable case can be made that, in fact, had there been some better surveillance available, they would have actually been able to solve some of these cases, so or prevent some of these cases, really. So people from the Cambridge Police Department actually gave some testimony and give some examples of how you can prevent trouble And I don't mean trouble like as in protest trouble. I mean, people want to focus on that, but I'm talking about serious, safety concerns. Anyway, I thought it was an interesting meeting, even though I didn't get to speak my piece. But anyway, in the end, they settled on the notion that the city council wasn't going to give the approval until the police department basically gives at least a draft form of a policy on how they would deal with any data collected through the use of drones, or how they would be implemented and what have you, which something they had promised they would be doing anyway. It's just that instead of saying it, giving the okay and then getting the policy, we'll now have to get the at least some draft form of the policy, and then the okay from the council. But I'm absolutely certain that the approval will be forthcoming, so worry not. And if you really think the Cambridge Police Department is going to be doing some sort of dreadful things with drones, I think you really should come and visit Cambridge sometime, because you clearly don't know the city at all. Anyway, so those are some big matters of consequence. I think I did mention about the contract, and I think I mentioned about the multifamily housing. Oh yes, and one of the consequences of the multifamily housing, if I may say one more thing about that, is that since it unquestionably there's already evidence, people coming around saying, "Do you realize your property is now worth a lot more because of the now the buildability? You can build four to six units on place that previously could only do, one or two." The vultures from the real estate world are coming in already and are looking for properties, or at least to advise you on what you can do with your property, and wishing to help you out, right? But one of the things about increasing the property value by increasing building potential is that the whole logic of how the I think it's rather ill-founded affordable housing overlay is structured. It's structured so as to really, let's be honest, the affordable housing overlay, the principle is let's limit the amount of buildable potential to market developers and then open it up high for nonprofit housing developers so that they get a competitive advantage in the marketplace, in the real estate marketplace. So that if you're just a start or homeowners rehab or the Cambridge Housing Authority for that matter, in principle, they would have the advantage in terms of over a market developer. So okay, so what happens when you increase the allowable building in homes, in residential properties all around the city? Well, you've just whittled away some of that advantage between what the nonprofit can do under the affordable housing overlay and what a market developer could do. So you've just taken away some of that advantage. So it's inevitable. In my view, it is inevitable. We've already seen AHO 1.0, the first round. And then when there were some changes made, they didn't, and or they weren't building enough units were not being produced. They created AHO 2.0. So now you're already seeing indications. There's already a city council order came in, I think, at the last meeting, previous meeting, saying we want to get look at what adjust other adjustments we must make to the affordable housing overlay, in order to restore any advantage that it may have. They certainly have ex any restrictions that were written into the this latest multifamily honing. They already have said we're just gonna eliminate those, for affordable housing projects, right? So again, don't be too surprised if in the coming weeks or months you have an AHO 3.0 comes floating down, where they're going to say, well, instead of saying you could build 9 or 13 stories in order to get that advantage, we're afraid we have to increase it to 15 to 20 stories now, on corridors or what have you, in order to give just a start Cambridge Housing Authority, homeowners rehab, or some of the other players in this game who drafted the legislation in the first place, let's be honest, to restore their advantage. And if I may express one more somewhat, you might argue, cynical viewpoint about it, is that the way AHO was originally written really was not so much about creating housing all around the city like it was sold. It was really about allowing places like the Cambridge Housing Authority, just to start homeowners rehab, to build more and more densely and with greater height on their existing properties. And almost all of the AHO projects that have been submitted and been, filed for and approved are of that nature. How many are we really going to see, happening elsewhere around the city? Probably not so many, unless they really jigger the rules of zoning to make it so advantageous that you'd be crazy not to sell out to Justice Dart or something like that, because but especially if you don't like your neighbors. All right, so next on the list here. Oh yeah, so last night, and actually I think what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take my little artificial pause and then come back in a second. So see you in a second on Cambridge Inside Out.